holding on. Ayn Ches Amud Beis, about the middle of the wide lines. The line begins Achriz. We're holding at the end of that line, Amud of Chana. We said in the Mishnah that Nisinim are also to ever intermarry into the Jewish people. So we said the Nisinim are the descendants of those people, from the Knanim who lived in and around the city of Givon, who in the times of Yeshua, they tricked Yeshua and the rest of the Jewish people into thinking that they were from some faraway country, and they made a peace treaty with them and swore that they'd help them. And then afterwards, when it turned out that they're Knanim, like this, it should have been Loisachayek on the Shema. It would have been normally that, like all the other Knanim, they have to be destroyed. But in this case, because they'd made a Shavua and it would have made a Chilul Hashem to break it, even though it was made under false pretenses, then Yeshua told them that we'll leave you alive, but you have to be chot ve'etzim v'shoy ve'mayim. You have to be wood choppers and water drawers for the Mishkan. So now we're going to discuss later on, and we're going to discuss later on in the Gemara. Tosfos discusses. Good morning, Aaron. And the Gemara discusses. Tosfos discusses where exactly does the Isser on them come from? Is it Daraisa or is it Darabanan? So we'll get back to that point later. But anyway, the Mishnah had said they're also to ever intermarry into the Jewish people. So now let's talk about that story. Amar of Chana Ba'ada, Nisinim David Gozer Aleha. That David made the Gzera that the Nisinim should not intermarry into the Jewish people. So we'll have further on, we'll talk about Moshe, and there's a certain stage of it from Moshe's times and from Yeshua's times and from David's times later on, where we'll talk about, Tosfos discusses certain ins and outs of it. Are we talking about the Isser that he made the Isser of marriage on them, or is that Isser already Minat Torah, and we're just talking about some other Gzera? Anyway, why did David make a Gzera on them that they can never join the Jewish people? So the reason is, first of all, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayikra Melech LaGivonim, Vayimer Aleihem, the king had called the Givonim, and he said to them, what he said to them, we're going to talk about in a minute, and the Pasuk interjects, Vagivonim loy b'nei Yisrael, heimer v'gomer, the Givonim are not from b'nei Yisrael. So we're understanding that the reason that what the Pasuk is telling us, the Givonim are not fit to enter into the Jewish people, they don't deserve to become part of the Jewish people for reasons that we're going to see in this story. Now, what happened? My time of Gozer Alayhu. So why did he make Gzera? So like this, the background is like this. By he, Rav, we made David Shalosh Shonim Shona Achar Shona. During David's times, this is at the end of David's life, when he was king, he had already been king for 30 odd years. There was a famine in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years, year after year. So there's a famine. The first thing you need to do is find out why Hashem brought a famine. Find out what Averis might be causing it. So Shana to Shona Omalahem. So during the first year, he tells the Jewish people, Shema Ovd Averis Kechavim Yeshbachem. Maybe there are people among the Jewish people, who are worshiping Averis Zara, and that's causing it. Dichtiv, after all, we say every day in Shema. That if you worship other gods and bow down to them, but also then Hashem will stop up the heavens and there won't be rain. So they spent that entire year, they searched around all of Eretz Yisrael and they found nothing like that. Nobody was worshiping Avodah Zarah. During the second year, the famine is still going on. So David said, and we can understand, by the way, during that first year, it meant, obviously, you know, he's not just telling them once, he's telling them speeches over and over again about how bad of a disorder is and how serious it is, and to make sure to remove any trace of it, and meanwhile sending around soldiers and police to check whether in fact there is any, and they didn't find any. So that wasn't the problem. Shnia Amalahem, during the second year, David says to them, the famine's still going on, Shema Ovid Avera Yeshbachem. Or there may be among you people who are doing Avera, where Avera, unspecified in the Gemara, means Znus. So, and that can also cause a lack of rainfall. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Vayimonu Revivim, the showers of rain have been held back. Umalkush Loihoya, and there was no Malkush, which we learned back in Sefer Tainis, is the late rain that comes late during the season, Nissan time. Umetzach Isha Zona, Hoyalach, the Gomer, and you had the forehead of an Isha Zona. So, in context, the Pasuk, the Navi, is telling the Jewish people that despite the fact there hasn't been rain, you're being stubborn and you're not doing Tshuva, like the way that an Isha Zona would be brazen and stubborn and saying, I'm not doing anything wrong. But the Gemara is understanding, in other words, that there's a connection between Znus and a lack of rain. So, is there any of that? He's asking them. again, Bot Gulei Motsu, during that entire year, he's telling them about it, and they're checking throughout the land, and they didn't find it. Shlishis, in the third year, Omalahem, Shema Poskit Tzedakah Barnabim, Yashbachem, Ve'inim Noisnim. Are there maybe among you people who announced in public that they're going to give tzedakah, like by a Mishaberach or something, and didn't give? And that can also cause the rain to be stopped. The Pasuk says there's clouds and there's wind, but there's no rain. Ish mishalal b'matas shoker, a person who prides himself on a false gift. So in Pashat Pshat, the Pasuk is telling us the same, it's telling us a mashal and a nimshal. The same way as you're so disappointed when there's wind and clouds, but then there's no rain, the same way it is when a person prides himself on giving a gift and then he doesn't actually give it. But the Gemara rather is understanding, and we learned this in Tainus as well, that it means that there's actually a cause and effect relationship here. When there's Ishmis Halal Matas Shaker, then that causes the rain to stop because of that Avera. Which, by the way, Rashi mentions in Tainus, it doesn't mean only Barabim. We're mentioning Barabim because usually that's how people do it. A person will make, you know, there'll be an appeal, Barabim, and a person will get up and say, I pledge X amount, and then he doesn't actually follow through with it. But the same way would be to a certain extent if he did it in private as well. Anyway, so is there anything of that? Again, they searched throughout Eretz Yisrael and they didn't find. Which shows you, by the way, you see so far from the story what a high level the Jewish people were on, not a trace of any of these problems. Anyway, so the famine is still going on. Omar, so David says to himself, in that case, ain't a dover tolu ella be, then it depends only on me. It's not something that the Jewish people are doing in Avera, so therefore it must be something having to do with the kingship. By the way, Marashah says, how do we get this whole part of the story that we're saying that for 3 years, every year they're checking for a different Aveda? He says that's why the Pasuk makes a point of saying Shona Achar Shona. Once it says that the famine was for 3 years, why do you have to add that it was year after year? That's what it means. Every year was a different kind of thing that they're searching for a different Aveda, and they didn't find. So David is saying to himself now, in that case, it depends only on me. It must be something that has to do with the Malthus. Miyad by Vakish David is Pnei Hashem. So therefore, the pasuk continues that David looked, or that David searched for, sought for the face of Hashem. What does that mean? Ma'hi Amar Shlokish Shal Ba'Urim V'Tumim. At that point, he asked the Urim V'Tumim, "What's going on over here?" Now, the point is, Marashah says, up until this point, if it didn't have to do with the king, then he can't necessarily ask the Urim V'Tumim. It has to be something that affects the whole nation, and if there's possible averus first, then he has to deal with those first. But once he found there's no averus that could cause a lack of rainfall, that could cause a drought, then he, as the king, is entitled to ask the Urim V'Tumim. So that's what he did. My mashma, where do you see from the word Pnei Hashem that it means the Urim V'Tumim? Amar Rav Elazar, Asya Pnei, because we have a Gzeira Shava on the word Pnei. Ksivacha Vayvakash Shava is Pnei Hashem. Uchtivasim V'Shala V'Mishpat Urim L'Fnei Hashem. In Parashas Pinchas, Hashem tells Moshe that Yeshua is going to stand in front of Elazar and ask him for the judgment of the Urim, for the judgment of the Urim V'Tumim, Lifnei Hashem, before Hashem. So we see that asking for Pnei Hashem means asking the Urim V'Tumim. Well, the answer came back. The pasuk continues, Vayomer Hashem El Shaul Vel Beis Adomim. It's because of Shaul and because of the bloody house, his family, in other words, Ala Shehemis HaGivonim. Because he killed the Givonim. So what does this mean? It's saying two things. El Shaul, number one, it's saying because of Shaul, something was done wrong regarding Shaul, Shaloi Nisfad Kahalacha. He was never mourned, they never made a hesped for him properly. So at the end of Shmuel Aleph, it tells how Shaul and his sons went to war against the Plishtim on Har Gilboa. They were all killed over there. Shaul and three of his sons and many of the Jews were killed over there. The Plishtim, then the pasuk goes on to talk about, they took the bodies of Shaul and his sons and hung them up on the walls of Beis Shaan as a trophy, because at that point they controlled the city and they wanted to show, look, we finally got rid of our enemy. Yidden from the city of Yobish Gilad across the Yaudin, sneaked across the Yaudin and went on Mesiras Nefesh and recovered the bodies. But they didn't, for whatever reason, maybe because of fear, I guess because of fear of the Plishtim, they didn't actually make a whole a whole elaborate funeral for him, that the whole Eretz Yisrael should, that all the Yidden from all over Eretz Yisrael should participate. Instead, they just buried him there in Yavish, in Yavish Gilad. So, okay, the pasuk says they cried and they fasted and whatever, but they didn't make a proper hesped as they should for a king of the whole Jewish people. In fact, actually, there was an explanation that at the beginning of Shmuel Beis, it says when David found out the news and he made a whole kina, he said a whole long poem over there about 10 psukim, bewailing the loss to the Jewish people of Shoal and of Yonasan. But the Jewish people in general, usually, you know, the Maratz Chayus explains that usually when a king passes away, they had like a standard hesped that they begin with. And a standard hesped that they begin with, and they didn't do that, and they didn't do that as befits Shoal's honor. So now Hashem is holding that against the Jewish people. Now this is many years later. This is almost 30 years later, but still, all along that's been up in the air. So that's El Shoal and El Beis Adomim. What's the second part? El Beis Adomim. Because we're saying that he killed Givonim. So now, where do we ever find that Shaul killed the Givonim? Because he wiped out the city of Noiv, which was a city of Koinim. That was the city where the Mishkan was located at the time. So everybody who lived in the city were Koinim or were somehow connected with the Mishkan. So you have the whole story earlier in Sefer Shmuel, where David at one point had gone over there and Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, had given him food and a sword and so forth. This is after David, this was when David was on the run from Shoal. This is after the story that's in Aftarah of Mocha Chodesh, where Yonasan told him, your life is in danger, you got to run away. So he ran off to Noiv and he was starving over there, and Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, helped him out. Akitzur Doig used that to twist things. He was a Baal Lashon Hara, unfortunately, and he twisted it into claiming that Achimelech and the rest of the Kohenim over there and David are actually in cahoots. So Shaul ordered that the whole city be wiped out, and Doeg ended up doing that. So mitoich shehemet shaholag noiv irakoinim, because Shaul had Noiv, the city of the Kohenim, wiped out, so he must speak in lahem mayim umazin. Now they used to supply the food and water to the Givonim. So now, when the Kohenim of Noiv are wiped out, it means that the Givonim, they lost their parnosa, they lost their livelihood. Mala olav akosu kila horgan, the posset counts it as though he killed them. Now, So Marsha says, one second, what do you mean, Rashi, that the Kohenim gave them food and water? On the contrary, the Givonim are the ones drawing the water. So he actually explains the other way around, that it means that the Givonim were providing food and water for the Kohenim of Noiv, and now it's not that they lost their Parnosa, it's that they lost that Zchus. And now all those years later, the fact that they lost that Zchus still rankled by them. And therefore, that's why now Hashem is standing up on their behalf.
You mean they weren't using that as commerce to make money?
So in other words, according to that, it would be they weren't necessarily using it to make, what they wanted was the schutz, yeah. With that said, though, Rashi on the pasuk brings from Yerushalmi that it's not just that they lost their livelihood. The Yerushalmi also brings that in addition, seven Givonim were actually killed in the crossfire. And the Yerushalmi lists there were two Choit Ve'etzim, two Shoyer Ve'mayim, and a Shamash, and a Chazan, and a Sofer. Apparently, by the way, you know, we were talking about yesterday about how Yeshua had said the Givonim are going to be Choit Ve'etzim, Shoyer Ve'mayim, and the question was brought up, I mean, how do you force an entire nation to be that? Apparently, we see from that Rashi and from that Yerushalmi that it wasn't necessarily. The point is, there would always be among the Givonim Choit Ve'etzim. Some of them could have other, some of them could fill other jobs that were needed for the Mishkan as well. Anyway, the point is, so now that's what the Pasuk is saying, that Hashem holds those two things against the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, isn't it contradictory? We're saying on the one hand, Shaul was not eulogized the way he should be. In other words, that Hashem is standing up for Shaul's honor. And on the other hand, at the same time, Hashem is also criticizing him that he caused the Givonim to be killed. How does that is why, and that therefore his family has to be punished for it? What does one have to do with the other? And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. What does it mean in the Pasuk? Bakshu es Hashem kol anvei oretz. All of you humble people of the world, seek Hashem. Hashem mishpatoi pa'olu. with his judgment, they accomplished. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk means something like all of you who accomplished Hashem's justice in the world, all of you seek Hashem. And in other words, Hashem is accessible to you in tefillah. But we're darshaning, Hashem shpatai sham pa'alu. It means where Hashem's justice is, there you have the person's mention of the person's deeds. So yes, when Hashem is bringing up, when there's a kitur of Lamaila about Shaul, that he did wrong by wiping out Noiv Irakonim, at the same time, the good things that he did are mentioned also in Shemayim in his favor. And that includes the fact that now there's still this open thing that they hadn't mourned for him properly when he was killed. Marsha points out the reason why the Gemara darshins it that way is because if it was all referring to Hashem's justice, then it would be Hashem Mishpat Pa'alu, that the people did Hashem's Mishpat. Mishpat Toi means, in other words, we mean his justice as in the justice of the person. When the person is being judged, at the same time, Pa'alu, what he accomplished, the good that he accomplished in the world, is also being mentioned. So therefore,
how exactly did he die?
So he died, I told you, the Plishtim killed him and his sons in battle.
They were battling the Plishtim
at Haragavaya.
And he lost his schus because of the...
He had lost his schus for several reasons. Altogether, the Medrash mentions five things that he had done wrong. Yeah. There's a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim that mentions to a couple of them, and then the Medrash expands as a couple more. Yeah. By the way, an interesting thing is none of the five are, for example, the Noivir Akonim, the fact that he went to the Ashes Balas Oiv, a couple of other things. Interestingly, the fact that he pursued David is not on the list. Because when you think about it, why was he pursuing David? Because he genuinely thought that David is a danger to him and to the kingship. So he was terribly misguided about that. But nevertheless, we can't hold that against him. Yeah. Anyway, let's continue the Gemara. Omer David. Okay, so David figures like this. Okay, of those two things, Shaul, as far as making a hesped for Shaul, nafkulu treisu yachishata, 12 months have already passed. Now, not just 12 months. By this time, Rashi says it was well over 30 years. But what we mean, we're mentioning 12 months because that's usually the amount of time within which you make a spadim for a person. So it's not the normal thing to make a hesped for him. If we start making a hesped now for Shaul 30 years later, it's just going to look odd. So there's really nothing we can do about that at this point, David figures. It's not recovered dick for him. But Nisinim, as far as the fact that he harmed the Nisinim directly or indirectly, okay, Nikrinu v'nefaisinu.
Because of the Urim HaTumah.
So Nisinim, Nikrinu v'nefaisinu. Okay, so let's call in the Nisinim and let's appease them. Let's see what they want, what they want in order to not be angry at Shaul anymore. So therefore the pasuk says, Vayikra melech la'givonim. So the king David called the Givonim by Yemir Alayim, and he says to them, Mo es alachem, what can I do for you over Moachaber? How can I atone for what was done wrong to you? Uvorchu es nachlas Hashem, and that way you will bless the heritage of Hashem, meaning the Jewish people. So in other words, he's telling them like this, you among yourselves are cursing out Shaul and the Jewish people for treating you badly. What can we do to make it up for you? Well, Vayom Rulaya Givonim, the next passage continues, the Givonim say to him, listen, we have no claims for gold and silver against Shaul and his family. And it's not like we want anybody else from the rest of the Jewish people to be killed. So David says, okay, so what do you want? So they say, let there be given to us seven men from Shaul's descendants, and we will hang them in honor of Hashem. So in other words, they want so they're saying we were harmed, that our according to Rashi, that our panosa was taken away, according to Maharsha, that our schus was taken away, and according to the Yerushalmi, that seven of us were killed. Therefore, we want lives instead of lives. We want seven of Shaul's descendants, that we should be able to kill them, and then we'll forgive them.
This whole thing is so odd, because the punishment that they got with the rain and all that came because of Shaul. Shaul's the one here. One of the things that some is angry is that they didn't give him right respect. And meanwhile, he's the one that caused the...
That's what the Gemara was just saying. Hashem Mishpatei Pa'alu. That's what the Gemara was just saying. When there's a kitru, Gemaila, about what Shaul did wrong, at the same time, Hashem is also standing up for Shaul's honor, because after all, he was basically a tzaddik and he deserved the honor that he should have gotten. So that's exactly it. That's why these two things are going together. So the Givonim, in other words, are saying that we won't accept anything else other than lives. Um, but By the Mephias, Paisinu. So David tried to talk them out of that. So, you know, what are you going to gain from that? And nothing. They wouldn't be appeased. The only thing we're going to accept is the lives of seven of Shaul's descendants. In fact, Rashi brings on the Pasuk over there from the same Yerushalmi that points out there's a Kriuk Siv in the Pasuk over there. When it starts by saying, we quote the Pasuk over here, Ein Lonu Kesef Bezavim Shaul. So David thinks to himself like this. They're all saying, we don't want any gold and silver. We want lives. You know what David thinks to himself? You know what it probably is? There probably are individuals among the Gevonim who are willing to accept something else short of lives, but they're embarrassed to speak up in public. So therefore, there's a kriuk siv in the pasuk. We read it lonu, but there's actually it's written in the pasuk li ein li kesef bezahav, which means so David went individually to each one of the Gevonim to talk to him privately. Maybe you know, first do you need to dafka demand lives? Maybe you'll be willing to accept a monetary payment instead. And nope, not a single one of them. Ein lonu, collectively and individually, they're all saying we won't accept anything else, only the lives of Shaul's descendants. So Omar, so David says to himself, well, shlosha simonim yesh ba'umazu. We know that there are three simonim that mark the Jewish people. Harachmonim by bashanim v'goyim lechsadim, that the Jewish people are naturally rachmonim, kind, and bashanim, and they have a sense of shame, and goyim lechsadim, that they do kindness for other people. Rachmonim actually is merciful. And here we see that the givonim are not, they're cruel people. And the Gemara interjects where we see these three simonim. The pasuk says Hashem will give you rachmim and he will have rachmanos on you and make and increase you. So we see that Hashem gives you the quality of rachmim. By shonim dichtiv ba'avuti yirase al pneichem, we see after Matan Torah Hashem says that the Moshe tells them actually that the purpose of Matan Torah, one of the purposes, was in order that Hashem's fear should be on your faces. So therefore, in other words, a Yid has a sense of shame. Even when he's done wrong, he's embarrassed about it afterwards. And goyim lechsadim dichtiv lamana sheyitzave as bonaves base of the goyim. We find Avraham Avinu, it says that he'll command his children and his descendants after him. And the pasuk continues that they're going to, among other things, that they're going to do gmilas chasadim. So therefore, so we see that those are the three defining traits of the Jewish people. We know the Alter Rebbe mentions at the end of Perek Aleph of Tanya that those are not even part of the Nefesh HaLekis. Those are actually part of the Yid's Nefesh HaBahamas. So David says to himself, Kol sheyesh by shlosh simonim alolu, anybody who has these three simonim royally David ba'umazu, he deserves to enter and join together the Jewish people. But these givonim who are showing that they have no rachamim, that they're saying even 30 years later, then they're saying we want descendants of Shaul, where at least on the level that the Gemara is dealing with over here, they weren't necessarily involved in this whole affair. So stam, they're being achzoristic and demanding lives when it's not going to bring back the lives of the people that they killed, and it's certainly not going to bring back the parnoso or the schusim that they lost. So what are they doing? And it shows that they're cruel people. So therefore, that's when we said at the beginning of the story, we said that David gozer aleihem. When the pasuk says v'agivonim loyvim neisr aleima, that's what it means. That David announced, fine, I'm going to have no choice. I have to do what the givonim are saying because otherwise the famine is going to continue. But from now on, there's a rule that the Givonim are never allowed to join the Jewish people because of this. So the pasuk continues. So what did David do? Vayikach ha-melech ha-shnei b'nei Ritzba bas-aya asher yoldo l'shol. So David took the two sons of Ritzba bas-aya whom she had born to Shaul. Ritzba bas-aya was a pilegish of Shaul. So she had two sons. That's Harmoni v'es Mishiboshes. So the two of them, as well as the five sons of Michal Bashol, whom she had born to Adriel ben Barzillai from Mechola. So those were the seven. Those were the seven that were picked, that they were the ones who are going to be killed by the Givonim. By the way, I mean, you have details in this, who these seven are. Tosfos discusses that the Mephibosheth over here, now there are two Mephiboshethes. There's a, the possibly
the one that came up later.
So one second. So the Pasuk is going to, so we're going to quote in a minute that the Pasuk says that there was a Mephibosheth ben Yonasan, the son of David's friend Yonasan, he was spared. So therefore, obviously, this Mephibosheth is a different one. This is his uncle, a son of Shaul from Ritzpah Bas'aya. Tosfos points. Names ran in the family. But Tosfos discusses that we have a Gemara in Brachas that says that Mephibosheth was David's Rebbe. Tosfos says, apparently, this is the same one who was David's Rebbe, David had no choice but to hand him over. And Tosfos discusses that it's not now it's not Ish Boishes. It's not we know that Shaul had four regular sons from regular wives, not Pelagian. He had the three that were killed with him in battle at Haragobah. Yeah? There was the fourth one, Ish Boishes, who was a king for a couple of years, and then he was assassinated by a couple of his servants at the beginning of Shmuel Beis. He was king at the same time. David was king in Hebron, and he was king over the rest of the Shevatim, ruling out of Machanayim and Eber Yad. But at the beginning of David's reign. But anyway, so he was assassinated early on in David's reign. So therefore, obviously, that's not the one we're talking about over here. So therefore, so Tosfos says, now, how are you talking? I mean, it's his own Rebbe. How could he hand him over to be killed? So Tosfos says that apparently what happened was David davened on his behalf, just like the Gemara is going to say now that he davened on behalf of the other Mephibosheth, the first Tosfos, I remember. But the Loinena, apparently David was not answered, and this Mephibosheth's Rebbe was taken anyway. So that's as far as that. As far as the five sons of Michal, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, Rashi brings it on the Pasuk, that actually Michal was never married to Adriel. Her older sister Merab was married to Adriel. Michal was married to David. What it was is that, so the Gemara discusses a couple of possibilities, why it phrases it in the Pasuk this way. One answer is that, where one thing the Gemara points out is it means that Merab had these children, but then she passed away, and her sister Michal raised them, and therefore the Pasuk considers it as if she gave birth to them, because that's how it is. Kol ha-melamed es ben chaver ha-Torah, etc. Anyway, so those were the seven. So the Gemara says, Maishnohani, why dafka these seven? What they did is they took all the descendants of Shaul who were alive at the time, and they had them pass in front of the Oren. Any one that the Oren grabbed him meant lemisa. It means that he's one of the ones marked for death. And anyone that the Oren did not grab, l'chaim, goes and then stays alive. So therefore, these seven were the ones who were grabbed by the Oren. Like they were fixed, they were fixed in place when they passed by the Oren, like they couldn't move. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Chana Bar Ktina. So Rav Chana Bar Ktina says, how could you say that they just did a test based on the Oren? The Pasuk continues, Vayachmel HaMelech al Mephibosheth ben Yehonasan ben Shaul, that the king had mercy on Mephibosheth, the son of Yehonasan ben Shaul. So what do you mean? If it's the Oren catching them or not catching them, how is the king able to override that? The answer is Shaloi Havira. The answer is David had Rachmanus, that to begin with, he didn't have this Mephibosheth. Again, this Mephibosheth being the nephew of the previous one that we talked about, the one who was, there was a Mephibosheth who was grabbed, that we said was one of the seven, but now the Mephibosheth, the nephew, who was the son of Yehonasan. So the Pasuk goes on to say, David had sworn many years ago to Yehonasan to never harm him or his descendants. So therefore, so that's why. So we're saying, he had Rachmanus, he didn't have him walk in front of the Oren. Okay, but how can you show favoritism like that? It's din in a fascist. You put everybody through, you have everybody walk through, and Hashem will decide who it is. How does David have the right to say you don't have to go? One second.
So Hashem picked everyone.
That's what we're saying. Well, yes. So rather, we can say David did have Mephibosheth walk in front of the Oren. Mephibosheth, the son of Yohanneson, Ubikish Olav Rachmin. But then Vakolto, and the Oren actually grabbed him. He would have been one of the seven. Ubikish Olav Rachmin. But then David davened on his behalf. Upolto, and therefore the Oren let him go. So that's what it means of Ayach Malamel. But the Gemara says, "Va'akati masiponim yesh b'davar." Still, how do you do favoritism like that? Once the Oren grabbed him, then that's it. How can David say? Instead, we're going to let you go, and we're going to take some. So we're going to take some other person and kill him instead of you. How does he have the right to do that? Ela shebikesh rachmim shelo yiklatenu ha'oren. What it means is, when it says "Va'yachmal ha'melech," David to begin with asked for special rachmim from Hashem that the Oren should not grab Mephibosheth. He had no choice. He has to have him walk through just like everybody else. No one person's life is worth more than another's. But he davened to begin with in the schus of that his father, Yehonasan, was my friend that saved me, and that I swore to Yehonasan that I'm never going to harm him or his descendants. Hashem, please don't allow him to be grabbed. And sure enough, he wasn't.
So he had to abide by his oath.
So he had, right. So, but in other words, if the Aron had grabbed Mephibosheth, then he would have had no choice but to override that. On a pshat level, actually, on a pshat level, Mephoshim talk about over there. I think the Ababonel talks about over there that maybe what it was is Mephibosheth was a little kid at the time. Yohanan, well, not only Mephibosheth was a little kid at the time, but Yohanan, this whole thing of why was Noiv Irakonim wiped out, and why did this whole story happen? Because Shaul held it against David that they'd helped him. Obviously, he says, the Ababonel says, Yohanan wasn't involved in that because he wouldn't have wanted them to wipe out Noiv Irakonim for helping David. On the contrary, he's David's friend. So therefore, that gives a reason why his descendants shouldn't be the ones to suffer this fate. Mashenkin, the other sons of Dov Shaul, didn't object, or maybe even they participated, and therefore they can be held to account for it.
It's interesting that this famine is happening, and the Gibbonim are the ones that hold the key to Hashem providing parnasa.
Yeah,
and Hashem doesn't just like override that. So this is
hold on.
Okay, I'm waiting. Yeah. Waiting,
okay.
Waiting.
So the Gemara asks, "V'aksiv lo yumsu oves abonim b'gamer." Doesn't the pasuk say that fathers shouldn't be killed because of their sons? And the pasuk continues, "Vice versa, ish b'cheta yumasu." Each person is killed for their own averus. So how can the sons of Shaul be killed because of something wrong that their father did? So Amar Rav Chiya Abba, Amar Rav Yechanan, mutav shete'oka ois achas min ha-Torah. Better that even one letter of the Torah should be uprooted. In other words, that we're going to, for right now, ignore it. V'al yischal Hashem shemayim v'fahesya, rather than make a chilul Hashem. Because the fact is, the Givonim had been treated badly. And since now it's wrong of them to be saying that we want lives in return for that, because again, what are they gaining from that? And it shows that they're achzorim and whatever. But nevertheless, there still was a chilul Hashem, that they had been treated badly. So therefore, people are going to think, Rashi says, Goyim are going to think, why should any of us ever bother joining the Jewish people as Gerim? After all, look at that. They mistreated Gerim and nobody stood up on their behalf. So therefore, David is saying, in order to undo the Chilul Hashem that would be caused by that, we have no choice but to override the din of the Torah and punish the children on behalf of their fathers, on behalf of their father, Shaul. Now, actually, Marsha points out, it's one thing as far as the five sons of Michal, we can say that the five sons of Michal, we said, are really the five sons of Merav, whom Michal raised. We could say that maybe they were little, and we find that sometimes little kids are punished so that's five of the seven. But the two sons of Ritzba Bas Aya, those are actually Shaul's sons. Necessarily, by now they're Dolim again, because this is 30 odd years after Shaul was killed. So therefore, Maharsha says, so particularly with them, how could we say that, were it not for the fact that in this case, David decided as a haras Shaul, we have to override what it says in the pasuk. But therefore also, when we're going to talk about in a minute, the Gemara is going to say that Ritzba Bas Aya, their mother, was matzik alayas adin. She accepted Hashem's judgment and didn't complain. Part of that is that not only she didn't complain, Hayitoch and my kids were killed, but even that she could have complained. At least they were adults. Why should Hashem hold them responsible for what happened many years ago? Why should Hashem be punishing them on behalf of Shaul, on what Shaul did wrong? But she didn't. She accepted Hashem's judgment without complaining. And that's a credit to her.
Five of them were
the sons of Merab, and the other two, so grandchildren of Shaul, in other words, through his daughter Merab, and the other two were Shaul's sons through his Pilagish.
Yeah. And Mephibosheth,
the Rebbe of David. So Tosfos says that Mephibosheth, the Rebbe of David, was one of those two sons. The other one was called Armoni. Yeah. So Shaul to begin with had four sons from regular wives, and then he had at least these two sons from a Pilagish. We may have had more, we don't know. But of the four that he had from regular wives, three of them were killed in battle with him at Har HaGilboa. And one of them, Ishbosheth, was king for a couple of years and then was assassinated by a couple of his servants. So now at this point,
when did it become not right to have children from Pilagish?
From Pilagish? So the Rambam says that only a king is allowed a Pilagish.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Did I have a disagree with that? But anyway, yeah, that's a discussion for another time.
I'll
okay. Okay. Fine. All right. Onward. So the pasuk continues. So that's why, even though usually children are not punished for their father's averus, especially when they're older, but here it was an exception in order to undo the chilul Hashem that had been created by the way the Givonim had been treated. So now the pasuk continues. Vatikach Ritzba bas Aya as a sack. The Ritzba bas Aya, the mother of two of these people who had been killed, took a sack. Batateo lo alatsur. She leaned it against the rock. Mitchilas kotzer. From the beginning of the harvest, the seven were hanged at the beginning of the harvest season. Rashi brings on the pasuk that it was Tetzayin Nisan, the first day Chol Hamoed Pesach. So from then, ad mitach mayim aleim and shemayim, until water poured down on them from shemayim, meaning until the Yemoisag Shomim, until the rainy season, which in Eretz Yisrael begins Cheshvan. So in other words, what happened was, now the bodies have been hanged over there. They're staying out there for several months, which the Gemara is going to ask in a second. You're usually not allowed to do that. So now she was concerned that the bodies are going to get attacked by wild animals or wild birds or birds of prey or whatever. What?
They're rotting by now.
No, but it takes time for them to rot. Meanwhile, wild animals. So what she did is she stayed over there protecting them. She stayed over there standing guard over them. When it says that she set up a sack, means like that was a lean-to for herself and maybe for the bodies as well to keep them, to preserve them against being devoured by wild animals or whatever. Oh. And she was there like that, saying for 7 months from Nisan until Cheshvan.
This is part of punishment why you didn't... had the fact because they let Shoal's
right.
Not, so here,
no, but that, it wasn't because they let Shoal's body. It was because they didn't make a hesped properly. So now, one second. So now the question is, and the pasuk continues, "V'le'nosna oifa shemayim l'nuach aleim yoyim." She would not allow the birds of prey to rest on the bodies by day, v'chayas asod aloyla, or the wild animals to attack them by night. So she's partially staying as a one-woman guard, 24/7, over them for 7 months. So the question is, and in fact, Marsha brings from a medrash that the word hatsur over here doesn't just mean the rock as in where she was standing. It's also hatsur as in hatsur tamim paloi, that she recognized that Hashem is just, that Hashem is fair. Hashem has his reasons for doing things, and she didn't complain how you talking that my kids were killed. And that's what we're saying. She went on Mesiras Nefesh to preserve the bodies, yeah. So the question is, doesn't the pasuk say even when a person is hanged by basting, when their body is hanged after skila, it says you're not allowed to leave the body hanging overnight? So how do they leave the bodies here hanging for 7 months? The answer is Amar Rav Yechon, Meshum Rav Shimon ben Yitzchak. Again, Mutav Shetaoker Oisachas Ben Torah. David figured in this case it's better to override even one letter of the Torah. V'yiskadesh Shem Shemayim v'Hesya. Not only do we want to take away the Chilul Hashem, as we said before, but we want to create a Kiddush Hashem, a public Kiddush Hashem. So you Ovrim V'Shovim V'Shovim Ovrim. Now, during the next 7 months, when the bodies are when actually this Hatsur actually Tosfos was brings it from the Medrash actually. Anyway, so Shahol you Ovrim V'Shovim Ovrim. Passers-by, Goyish passers-by would say, they would ask, what's going on? Why are these seven bodies hanging there? And people would tell them, these are sons of the kids, sons and grandsons of the previous king. And they would ask, so what did they do wrong that they were hanged? And the answer would be, they stretched out their hand and they attacked Gerim Grurim. Gerim means, of course, Gerim. Grurim literally means like dragged in, like people who are not even, so to speak, legitimate Gerim. They dragged themselves in to begin with and then tricked the Jewish people into accepting them as Gerim a couple of hundred years earlier. So now, because they attacked Gerim Grurim, is why now they were punished and now the family was punished and now then they're hanged. Omru, so the people, these goyim, would say, look at that, there's no nation in the world that it's worth joining like the Jewish people. Because they would say to themselves, listen, if even princes, people from the royal family, are being treated like that, in this nation, we can see therefore that even that commoners, how much more so, would know not to act like that because they're going to be punished. And umag gerim grurim kach, and madach, if they mistreat gerim grurim like that, Yisrael lachas kama b'kama, how much more so if a yid mistreats another yid? So they would realize what a moral, they would realize what a tremendous standard of morality there is among the Jewish people. You have to realize, by the way, in those days, you know, the Torah warns over and over again, don't harass a ger, don't remind him of his origins and whatever. One point is, you have to realize in those times, most people lived near their extended family. And the reason was, among other things, because their extended family has their back. That's the idea behind the Goyal Adam and other such things. If a person were to go nowadays, you have a person, a person is finding it hard to live in one place. Okay, you know, they pick up and move to another place. Okay, so I don't know a soul over there, big deal. I'll make friends there soon enough. In the old days, it wasn't like that. If you didn't have your family with you and you don't know how to defend yourself or something, then you're a dead man. So like this, in the Goyish nations around there, it was an accepted thing. A ger, you mistreat a stranger. He's new in town. You can do whatever you want to him. There's nobody who's going to have his back. So now all of a sudden we're seeing that seven princes from Shaul's family were killed for mistreating Gerim Grurim. It made people realize this is a whole different kind of nation. This is a whole different kind of standard of morality than we're used to.
And then they didn't actually do anything to them.
And we're saying that they only broke off their livelihood. Yeah. Miyad mitvastu al Yisrael me'av chamishim elef. So right away, 150,000 Geirim joined the Jewish people. Shenema, as we find in the, now, but earlier in the Masechta, we said they weren't supposed to accept Geirim in the times of David and Shlomo. So the answer would be that they were based in Shalhad Yotis, but the dinim of people who maybe didn't know that particular halacha accepted such people as Geirim. But nevertheless, they still became Geirim, and b'dieved their Geirus is valid.
So we learn from these people not to accept Gerim.
We know not to accept Gerim, but nevertheless, because
the Givonim, we know their motive is pure.
Yeah, here we know their motive is pure because they're doing it because they realize how tremendous the Jewish people are. Yeah. Shenema, when we find in the next generation, by Hila Shlomo Shivim Elef Noisei Savol, Shlomo had 70,000 porters carrying burdens when he was building the Beis Hamikdash, or Shmonim Elef Choitzibahar, and 80,000 workers quarrying and cutting stones in the mountains. So those are the same 150,000 who had become the Gerim in the previous generation. Or not even the previous generation, actually. This is the end of David's kingship. This is almost at the end of his 40, at the end of his 40 years. Shlomo started building the Beis Hamikdash in the fourth year of his reign. So we're talking Sahakal 7 or 8 years later or something. So the Gemara says, how do you know? Maybe those 150,000 are born Jews. How do you know they were Gerim? The answer is Lois Sakudad. You can't think that. The Pasuk says that Shlomo did not make any of the born Jews into slaves. So if he's having people working for him as porters and quarriers and whatever, it has to be from Gerim. So the Gemara says, why? But Dilma Dugzer Ba'alma, or Runger, there's different theosophies over here, what the word is. But maybe he just hired workers. How do you know that they're Gerim that actually joined the Jewish people? Ela Mehocha, rather, the Pasuk in Divrei Hayomim clarifies it. It says, Vayispo Shlomo Kol Anoshim HaGerim Asher Be'eretz Yisrael. Shlomo counted all the Gerim that were in Eretz Yisrael. Vayimotsu, when they found them, Me'av HaChamishim Olaf, and he found there were 153,600. And then, Vayas Mehem, so he made of them, Shivim Elef Sabol Shmonim Elef Chotzebahar, 70,000 of them he made into porters and 80,000 into quarriers. And then the Pasuk says the other 3,600 were four men who are supervising them and making sure the work is getting done correctly. The point is, in other words, that there was a schus. That's the point. In other words, we're saying that, but still, Doug Shlomo didn't feel it's right to make born Jews labor in this. They can be doing other jobs for the Beis Hamikdash. They can be doing things that don't necessarily involve such heavy physical labor. So therefore, we see clearly from that pasuk that the 70,000 and the 80,000 were from among the Gerim. So that's what we're saying, that 150,000 Gerim joined the Jewish people. And when did they join? Was as a result of the story that we just said.
Was it really hard? Because it said it was silent, making the Beis
Hamikdash. No, it was silent in that they didn't cut the stones on site. They cut them off site. They caught them off site. Yeah, but they cut them off site. There was still a lot of heavy labor involved. Okay, so that's the story. By the way, afterwards, the Gemara doesn't continue with the story, but afterwards, the Pasuk says that eventually David gathered up the bones of these the bodies of these seven people, as well as then at that point he took the bodies of Shaul and his sons who had been buried in Yavish Gilad 30 years ago, and he had them buried properly in their place in Eretz Yisrael in Givas Shaul, which means, in other words, that so the vote was that now David realized that, you know what, there is something we can do. We don't do that. At least at the top of the Amud, David said, you know what, it's more than 12 months since Shaul passed away. It's not really the covered to make a hesped. But now that he had, now he actually went ahead and did that and actually made a print, actually gave Shaul the proper cover that he was supposed to.
Is there any way what happened to this Rav that stopped after this whole thing?
So what happened to what?
The Rav ended.
Afterwards, the Pasuk says, also Hashem la'aretz. The Pasuk then continues that Hashem listened to the tefillos of the land, and then it started raining. In fact, we said, Ad mitach aleim mayim min hashamayim. We said that Ritzpah Basaya was sitting over there guarding them until water fell from the heavens, which means the following winter when Attaka started raining.
And then that's it.
Then they gathered up the bodies and buried them. Now she doesn't need to be there anymore.
And they left them there because...
That's what we're saying. They left them there in order to make a Kiddush Hashem. So everybody should realize how people who mistreat Gerim...
What was the
We said for 7 months. For 7 months, from Nissan until Cheshvan. Well, that's according to Rashi on the pasuk. Actually, the Abarbanel on the pasuk says maybe not necessarily. And maybe what happened was that year, because there had been a drought and there hadn't been rain, therefore exceptionally Hashem made it rain that summer. So maybe you could say that Nissan or whatever. So you could say that maybe it wasn't really that long. But yeah. Anyway.
So it means Abishter was.
So it means that Abishter was looking out for the. Yeah, that Abishter agreed. That's what we're saying. Yeah. Because in other words, what it is b'derech shadim roitz aleilach b'melichin oisei. Hashem makes a person go in the way they want. Since the givonim are demanding this cruel thing, then Hashem is sticking up on their behalf and saying, fine, if that's what they want, then that's what needs to be done. They should have had more rachmanus and said, we're willing to accept some other thing instead. That's what we're saying. David went around individually to each one of them to try and talk them out of it, and not one of them. Okay. All right. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Unisinim David Gozer Aleihem? You're telling me that David made a Gzeira on Nisinim? Moshe Gozer Aleihem. We find that Moshe, long ago, had made a Gzeira on them. Dichtiv Mechoitev Et Zahad Shoyev Memecha. We find at the beginning of Parashas Mitzavim that Moshe is talking about that all you Jewish people are collected together, and he mentions individually the Choit Ve'etzim Meshoyev Imayim. That means they're not part of the regular Jewish people. They're not part of regular Geirim either, because he mentions Geircha Hashem B'Sharecha separately in the Pasuk as well. Rather, these are Avodim. Whose job was Choit Ve'etzim Meshoyev Imayim. And the Givonim are also the same thing. So we see that Moshe already made a Gzeira. They're not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. Rashi on the Pasuk actually says that the same way as the Givonim, the main body of the Givonim came in Yeshua's time, there was a smaller number of them that came in Moshe's time and pulled the same trick, and they also got accepted as Choit Ve'etzim Meshoyev Imayim. So Moshe made the Gzeira. The answer is Moshe Gozer Lahu Dorah. Moshe's Gzeira is only for that generation. David Gozer Lahu Dorah, whereas David made the Gzeira for all generations. So now, here's where Tosfos discusses, here and also in Ksubas, Tosfos discusses a few possibilities. Now Rashi at the beginning of the Sugya explained that this whole thing that we're saying, that we're talking about the Gzeira of marriage. In other words, Daraisa, it would have been allowed to marry the Nesinim, but Dirabbanon, first Moshe, and then we're saying, then Yeshua, then David, were Gozer not to. However, Tosfos asks on that from certain other places, including a Mishnah in Ksubas, that seems to imply that that they're not actually considered avodim per se. And anyway, we learned a couple of blocks ago that we said that there is an issur chasnus on them even after they become geirim, and then they're from the seven nations of Canaan. So Tosfos discusses a few possibilities. Maybe what it is when we're talking over here about that Moshe made the Gzeira and then Yeshua and then David means the Gzeira that they're going to be avodim. The fact that they're going to be considered avodim to a certain extent, maybe not like full-fledged avodim, therefore the dinim in Ksubas don't apply to them as they would apply to a shiva. The dinim apply differently to a shiva than to them, but nevertheless avodim in the sense that therefore, that because of that, they're barred from the Jewish people. But the issue of marrying them, Tosfos learns, would have actually been Daraisa because they're from the seven nations of Canaan.
Anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Va'akati Yeshua Gozer Alai. Still, what does David have left to do? Yeshua already made a Gzeira on them. Dichtiv Vayitnem Yeshua Vayema Hu Choit Ve'etzim B'Shev Imayim. Yeshua made them on that day, the Givonim. He made them Choit Ve'etzim B'Shev Imayim Lo'eda for the congregation of the Jewish people, Ulam Mizbach Hashem, and for the Mizbeach of Hashem. So they're already, they're already from Yeshua's times, they have the status. The answer is Yeshua Gozer B'Zmanshi B'Smithash Kayim. Yeshua's Gzeira was meant to expire when the B'Smithash is destroyed. Only as long as the B'Smithash is standing will there be a Gzeira. David Gozer B'Zmanshi Ein B'Smithash Kayim. David added, because he saw that they have these bad midas, that it should continue even after the B'Smithash is destroyed. And we see that Yeshua's Gzeira was only when there's a B'Smithash, because it says, L'Mizbach Hashem. So only as long as there's a Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, B'mei Rebbe Bikshu L'Hatir Nesini. In Rebbe's times, they were thinking to be matur the Nesinim. Now, according to Rashi, that would mean, since Rashi learns that the whole issur on marrying them is only drabbanon from Moshe and later on Yeshua and so forth, so a later Beis Din could overturn it. Usually the rule is that a Beis Din cannot overturn a previous one unless they're greater b'chochma v'minyan. But one point is that maybe in Rebbe's times, he saw they don't have this bad midah anymore. Maybe the whole reason for the Gzeira was because of their bad midahs, and now he saw. However, Tosfos, who holds that the Issur on them to begin with is Deraisa, he says that it can't possibly mean that, because obviously Rebbe can't think, they can't think in Rebbe's times of being Matu and Issur Deraisa. Rather, Tosfos says the status of them as Avodim, they thought to cancel, because look, in Rebbe's times, the Bismithich has already been destroyed for 100 odd years, so therefore we don't need to have them have the status of Avodim. But Omer Lahem Rebbe, Rebbe says we can't do that. Chokenu Natu. Sure, we can be Matir or Chelik because based in because Hefker based in Hefker. They have the ability to be Mafkir, so fine. They were considered Avodim now. They're not going to be considered Avodim anymore. Chelik Mizbeach Miyatir, but who has the right to be Matir, the portion that belongs to the Mizbeach? There's no Mizbeach nowadays, but nevertheless, when the Bismikdash is rebuilt, then there's going to be. So therefore we can't be Matir then, says Rebbe.
At all.
Yeah.
So
Sancheirov
mixed everyone up.
Sancheirov mixed everybody up, but the Nisinim still stayed together with the Jewish people because, after all, they were still serving the Beis Hamikdash at the time. So when Yehuda and Binyamin went into Golos and the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, the Nisinim went with them. And when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, the Pesukim describe in Ezra and Nehemiah that a contingent of Nisinim also came back and resumed their job working for the Beis Hamikdash.
How they lost touch with them in Babylonia?
No, so that's apparently not. Apparently, they kept.
They stayed with us in Babel.
Yeah. In fact, there's a Gemara in Kedushin that mentions that there was an entire city over there that was composed of Gibonim. Yeah.
Oh, is that
Perak Dalet? In Perak Dalet, yeah.
Why would they want to be?
Because after all, this was their hereditary job, and especially like we said, Marshall says before, they knew there's a schus in it, so they wanted to keep that. Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, now this that Rebbe is saying we can't be matter than a sinim because of chelik mizbeach. That disagrees with what Rabbi Chiya Ba'ab says. The Amr Rabbi Chiya Ba'ab, Amr Rabbi Yechonah, Chelek Eidah La'olam Osir, the portion of the fact that the Nesinim are Osir because they're supposed to be, remember, Yeshua had said that they're going to be slaves, La'edah U'lamizbach Hashem. So there's two components. Number one, they're slaves to the Jewish people collectively, and number two, to Mizbach Hashem. So Rabbi Chiya Ba'ab says, Chelek Eidah La'olam Osir, the part that they're also because they're slaves of the Eda, that's always also unless a based in his matter, right? But chelik mizbeach bizman shebeis mikdash kaim also ein beis mikdash kaim shari. But he learns that part of the chelik mizbeach expires once the beis mikdash was destroyed. So that disagrees. We said Rebbe had said how can we be matter the chelik mizbeach even though there's no mizbeach nowadays? That chelik still exists and we have no right to be matter it. Whereas Rabbi Chiya Ba'ab is saying that we could do that. So according to the Chiya Ba'ab, if a Beis Din at some generation were to come together and decide we want to be Matur than a Sinim, we want to be Matur, Chelek Eda, then we would be allowed to do that, and it would be Mutur until Moshiach comes and the Beis Mikdash is rebuilt. Because then you have Chelek Mizbeach again.
That Shevet, well, I think was a god or one of the Shvatim who sinned and no one was going to marry them. And they got,
that was Shevet Ben Yamin, that was Pelag Shpagim, but then they were Matur.
They got so small that they were just... So what's with this Gevain? If you weren't allowed to marry them, why did the Gevain disappear?
Because apparently they were large enough. Nobody except for was saying that they lost their livelihood when Mishkan Noiv was destroyed. But there was no civil war again. No, they could marry among each other. Or they could marry Gerim and Diodas from other nations. When we just said that 150,000 converted, then some of them could have married Gevain.
Yeah, but somehow they would disappear.
Yeah, no. Okay. Mishnah says, now we're finally getting back to matters of Yibum and Chalitza after having digressed from them for the last 20 years or so. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Amar of Yeshua, Shamaiti Shasoris Chotzen B'Chotzen L'Ishtoi, I have heard from my Rebbeim that a Soris, which is somebody who's unable to father children, is able to do Chalitza, and they can do Chalitza for his wife. One second. On the other hand, Rabbi Yeshua says, I also heard from my Rebbeim that a Soris cannot do Chalitza, and they cannot do Chalitza for his wife, or they don't need to do Chalitza for his wife. The Emli Lefarish, I can't explain what kind of Soris is which. Omer Rabbi Akiva, Ani Afarish. So Rabbi Akiva says, let me explain it. Sris Adam, now you can have a Sris Adam, meaning that a person was born normal, and then afterwards he was made sterile. They cut away his beitzim or the chute beitzim or whatever. In Goyish societies, it was more common in the old days. For example, you have eunuchs. You have people that were serving kings. In particular, for example, when you have Megillas Esther, when you have Hegai Swiss Amalek, Shashka Swiss Amalek, these were people in charge of the women's quarters. So therefore, they would castrate them so that they don't have any ideas about getting involved with the women.
So anyway, such a
person is called a Swiss Adam. So Rabbi Akiva says, what you learned from your Rebbeim is like this. A Swiss Adam, he can do Chalitza if one of his brothers dies, or they can do Chalitza for his wife, because originally, during his lifetime, there was a time when he was fertile. The fact that afterwards he was castrated, that doesn't change things. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says, Swiss Chama, loy cholitz, loy cholitz and leishtoy, but a Swiss Chama, meaning that he was born already infertile, Cham, literally Swiss Chama means a Swiss of the sun. So it means, in other words, we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, it means, in other words, in effect, that as soon as he came out into the world, the first time he saw the sun, he already had this condition. So him, loy cholitz, loy cholitz and leishtoy, he cannot do a valid chalitza, and they don't have to do chalitza to his wife, because there was never a time in his life when he had the ability to father children. And the whole point, one second, the whole point of chalitza is instead of yibum, and yibum, the purpose is that lo yimocha shmoy Yisrael. So a Swiss chamer is already shmoy machui, because his name is already erased, because he can't have children, and he can't possibly, he's allowed to get married, fine, because the wife is not mitzvah on period, yeah? So it would mean that he's able to have relations. Maybe they're just he's not able to produce zera. He's not able to produce children. We're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow the simonim of him. One possibility, it seems from the simonim that we're going to say, it might be that we're talking about a condition of low testosterone, for example. He doesn't have enough male hormones, and therefore his body doesn't develop normally. The Gemara is going to say soon that there is a refuah to him. In other words, there is a way to give him that. With that said, there is also a condition. There's a condition that they have described in the medicalese, they call it Klinefelter's syndrome. Like this, normally a person has 46 chromosomes in every cell of their body, and two of those are an X and a Y. Sometimes you have a man has an extra Y. And they call it Klinefelter's syndrome, and among other things, such a man is infertile. Some of the simonim that the Gemara describes suggests that kind of thing, but the Gemara is including several different, what would nowadays be considered several different conditions under one heading of Swiss Chama. Anyway, so Rabbi Akiva says that kind loichotz in the shtay. Rabbi Eliezer oimer loiki. Rabbi Eliezer says no, that's not what it means. The other way around, el a Swiss chama cholitz v'chotz in the shtay. A Swiss chama can do chalitza, and they can do chalitza for his wife. Mipnei she yesh lo refuah. Because there is a way of healing him. Again, if we're talking about something of low testosterone, mistama, they can give him some extra hormones, and that'll help him. Swiss Adam, like Cholitz, like Cholitz and Lishta, but a Swiss Adam not, but they shame later for, because no healing him. Once they remove the relevant parts, and there's no putting them back. So the Gemara says, Hey, Rabbi Shurban Beseira, and Rabbi Shurban Beseira gave Eidos in front of the Chachamim, Al Ben Megusas, Jehoiab Yerushalayim, about a man named Ben Megusas who lived in Yerushalayim before the Churban. Swiss Adam, so he was a Swiss Adam. He had such an operation done to him. The Yibum was Ishtoi, and then when he passed away without children, because he couldn't have children, obviously, then they did Yibum for his wife. L'kayim divrei Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Beseira is saying that to support what Rabbi Akiva is saying, that yes, since he's a Swiss Adam, but because he had Shasa Kosher, because there was a time in his life when he was able to father children, when he would have been able to father children, then therefore, even now that he can't, then nevertheless, Chalitza still and Yibum still apply to his wife. Whereas according to Yibum, we just said you could. In fact, the Gemara is going to discuss that. But we see Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer had only talked about Chalitza. But the Gemara is going to explain that Rabbi Akiva would hold that even you could do Yibum with his wife.
Even he can't produce a family.
He can't produce a family, but nevertheless, since he died childless and he had a Shasa Kosher, Rabbi Akiva says that's reason enough that you could say that Yibum applies to his wife. So now his brother, who is not a Swiss Adam, will hopefully be able to have children with her, and that way it'll perpetuate his name. We're not talking about Ben Megusas himself doing Yibum for his wife's brother, for his brother's wife. We're talking about Ben Megusas died, and one of his brothers did Yibum for his wife. Yeah. So the Gemara continues. So the Mishnah continues. Hasoris lecholitz v'lemiyamim. Now we said a soris of one kind or another can't do chalitz or yibum. We have the machlokas, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, which kind of soris. V'chein ailonis lecholitz v'lemiyamim. Similarly, and this we've learned earlier in the Masechta, an ailonis, which is the parallel case with a woman who's infertile, and again, we're going to learn the simonim for tomorrow. Also, she doesn't need to do chalitza, and she cannot do yibum. Because again, she can't have children, and then the pasuk is implying that she has to have children, that she has to be able to have children. The Mishnah continues, Asoris shecholatz liyibdoi. So now, if a soris, whatever kind of soris it is that's possible, if he does chalitza for his yibama, loy psala, he doesn't passel her from marrying a kohen that way, because not considered a valid chalitza. So in other words, if you had two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, so Reuven dies, Shimon is a soris, of whichever kind the soris can't do chalitza, a Swiss chama according to Rabbi Akiva, which the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. So Shimon is a Swiss chama. So let's say he does chalitza to her, nothing happens, it's not a valid chalitza. Now, if Shimon dies, then she can marry a kohen. There's no other brother for her to have to worry about. And she's an almana, and an almana is allowed to marry a kohen. Had she been a chalutza, then she'd be possible to marry a kohen. ba'ala. But on the other hand, if he has relations with her, psala, then he makes her pasul, because there, since he's not supposed to be doing yibum with her, then it's eshes och, it's brother's wife, which is an erev to him. Because this is a bi'ila of znus, because if no yibum is possible, then it means that it's an iser to, yeah. The same way, if the wife was an ilonis and one of the brothers did chalitza to her, nothing changes. So she's still mutter to a koyin. But if they have relations with her, then they pass her. Because the same thing, have any of them having relations with her would be znus. Because again, she's their brother's wife and there's no mitzvah of yibum, and therefore there's the iser of erev. Okay, so the Gemara starts with mechti. Now let's consider what Rabbi Akiva is saying in our Mishnah. He's saying that a Swiss Adam, he's a person who was operated on and became infertile because of that. Cholitz v'cholitz in the ishtay. Now, the problem is that would make him a krustrofka or a psuadaka, as with earlier in the pattern, and he's not allowed to marry a Bas Yisrael. So mechti, let's consider. Shaminin l'Rabbi Akiva, we know that Rabbi Akiva holds the Omer Chayve Lavin Chayve Krisistomu. We know that Rabbi Akiva holds that the Chayve Lavin are the same as the Chayve Krisus, in the sense that a mamzer can be produced from both of them. That if the same way as we've been saying throughout Masechta, that for example, a person has relations with an Eshes Ish or with a close relative or whatever, the child is a mamzer. We've learned earlier in the Masechta that Rabbi Akiva holds the same thing if there's an Isur Lav. Now, a Swiss Adam, there's an Isur Lav. Because after all, the pasuk says, "Well, Yovei Psuadaka or Krusrafcha," and a Swiss Adam, by definition, is Psuadaka. So then, V'chayvik Krisos Lav Bnei Chalitza V'Yibum Ninu. Now we know that by Chayvik Krisos, there's no Chalitza and Yibum, as we learned back at the beginning of the Masechta, Chamesh Esrei Noshim Poitras, so they say. And that, for example, if Ruvain is married to Shimon's daughter, then Ruvain dies, then Shimon doesn't have to do Chalitza or Yibum. He can't do Yibum with his own daughter, and he doesn't have to do Chalitza with her either. So therefore, now Rabbi Akiva, now that's an Isur Karis. Rabbi Akiva holds that just like Kiddushin are not toifas by Chayvei Krisus, they're not toifas by Chayvei Lavin either. So according to him, why is Chalitza necessary in the case of a Swiss Adam? We should say the same thing. We should say the same thing as there's no Chalitza for Chayvei Krisus, the same way you should say there's no Chalitza for Chayvei Lavin. Why are we saying that chalitza has to be done to his wife? That Swiss Adam, he says, cholitz v'cholitz in the ishtoi. Why? It should be considered like chayvei krisus. The answer is, Amar Rabbi Ami, hachav mayaskinin, gan shenasa achav giyoras. We're talking about over here where his brother was married to a giyoras. Now, a psuadaka, can a psuadaka marry a giyoras? Well, we learned the other day about this machloikas. Rabbi Akiva, Savalok Rabbi Yosi, Dama Kal Gerim, La Ikri Kahal. We talked about the other day that there's Machlokas. Do we consider Gerim to be part of Kahal Hashem? When the Pasuk says, Lo Yovet Tzvodaka, the Kahal Hashem, does Kahal Hashem include Gerim? Rabbi Yosi holds that it does not. So therefore, Mamzer or Tzvodaka or whatever would be allowed to marry a Giyotis. So there you go. So Reuven was married to a Giyotis. He died. Now his brother Shimon is a Swiss on them. You're right. Had he been married to a Bas Yisrael, then according to Rabbi Akiva, no chalitza would be necessary because there's an Isur Lav. But because the wife is a Giyoras, therefore the Swiss Adam is perfectly allowed to marry her, and therefore he has to do chalitza. Therefore, if he doesn't want to marry her, then he has to do chalitza. So the Gemara says, Yehochi Yabumi Nami Miyabim. Well, then why are we talking specifically about chalitza? According to that, the Swiss Adam could also do yibum with her if he wants. Because after all, again, he being a Psuadaka, she being a Giyotis, they're allowed to get married. Fine, it's not going to do any good as far as having kids, but nevertheless, they should still be allowed. And the Gemara says, Enoch Nami. As a matter of fact, you're right, they could. But Ivy, the Omer of Yeshua Cholitz, Omer Iyu Nami Cholitz. Because Rabbi Yeshua quoted his Rebbeim as saying that a Swiss cholitz v'cholitz in the ishtoi, and another Swiss ein cholitz v'ein cholitz in the ishtoi. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva continues talking about chalitza, but in fact, Rabbi Akiva would hold that they could do yibum if they wanted to as well, in this case. And the Gemara says, dekanami. In fact, you can see that from the wording of the Mishnah, the Ketani, because after all, the Mishnah said, heyed Rabbi Yeshua ben Beseira, al ben magus astroi v'yushalayim Swiss Adam, that we had this case of a Swiss Adam who lived in Yerushalayim, v'yibum was ishtoi, and they did yibum with his wife, l'kayim de Rabbi Akiva, which supports what Rabbi Akiva says. Shmamina. So therefore, that proves that in fact, Rabbi Akiva would hold that they could even do Yibum, because that's what Rabbi Shimon ben Beseira is saying, that they actually did. It was a case where they actually, based in Yerushalayim before the Churban, actually did allow them to do Yibum.
We don't know that you can only do Yibum where it's shy to have children.
No, so the purpose of Yibum is to have children. But now we're saying, as long as there's no Isser, as long as there's no Isser of him marrying her, we're in this case, she being a Giyotas and he being a Psur Daka, there's no Isser, according to Rabbi Yossi, then fine, they can do Yibum even if they want. And that's what Rabbi Akiva holds. And that's what Rabbi Yeshua Ben Beseda is saying, that in fact, we know of one time that they did that. Well, she has to be right. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, continuing that discussion of what Rabbi Akiva holds in our Mishnah, and we'll talk about what the actual simonim of a Swiss Adam, of a Swiss Chama, and of an Ilonis are. So we'll continue that tomorrow, Bez Hashem.
It has to be different. Okay,